Blog Talk Radio.
The Dr. Karen Cam Radio Show, where the purpose of this show is to inspire and empower you to create the life of your dreams, whether that's optimal health, loving relationships, or just peace of mind. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Cam. And today's guest is Pam Colleen. And let me tell you a little bit about how I, quote unquote, met Pam. It was at the Real Food Summit, which recently I actually was a participant in it, and I heard her talk about adrenal burnout and nutrition, and it was such an information-packed webinar that she gave. It was so fabulous. I contacted her right away because I knew that a lot of people, especially my patients, who are often people with fibromyalgia and adrenal fatigue, would really benefit from the information that she knows, and she is super brainy and super nice, and I just thought, oh my gosh, I have to have her on my show, and she said yes, so we're very lucky to have her here. And like I said, I have a lot of people with adrenal fatigue, adrenal burnout, and I also was one of those people. Now, it's not like I'm 100% cured, but one of the things as a doctor we don't do well is nutritional counseling. Now, I've been studying a lot more of that lately, but in medical school, we maybe get 2 days. I hate to really admit it, but we only get like a few days of nutrition, and I think I fell asleep for those classes because I didn't like the teacher. So I didn't really learn a lot of practical information about nutrition. So when I was going through my adrenal burnout, I really thought I was eating well. I was eating a lot of whole grains, and I was doing vegetarian diet with, lentils and beans and Indian food, and it was delicious. But I also did some packaged foods, like pasta, and, I was just busy. So I just felt like I was eating as healthy as I could, and I didn't really feel that much better, at least from what I was eating. And now, learning what I'm supposed to be eating, I've changed my diet massively, but I know there's even more room for improvement. So that's one of the reasons I have Pam on the show. And if you would like to ask Pam a question when we get started, what you can do if you're calling in live, and the number is 818-514-1190. Again, that's 818-514-1190. To raise your hand, you just click 1 on your dial pad, and that'll raise your hand, and then I'll know when we have a break that you'd like to ask a live question. So let me tell you a little bit about Pam. Now, Pam is the author of the book Addiction, The Hidden Epidemic, and also co-authored the New York Times best-selling book The Great Bird Flu Hoax. She has been independently studying nutrition and natural health for over 20 years. Her interest in nutrition and natural health stems from overcoming a lengthy battle with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and multiple chemical sensitivities. I know all of those. As a nutritional consultant, she offers her clients a very comprehensive program which focuses on restoring their biochemical imbalances. She's also a dynamic and diverse public speaker and radio personality, which is why we have her on the show today. And her website is www.pamkilleen, PamKilleen.com. So without further ado, welcome, Pam.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Karen. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Well, maybe there's some people on the show who are here not because they have adrenal burnout, so they might not really understand, what are some of the telltale signs of adrenal burnout? Like, what is that exactly? How does it manifest?
Well, it's ironic. A lot of my clients come to me and don't even know they have adrenal burnout, that it's been a slow and insidious sort of burnout that's been happening for several decades in many people's lives. But some of the telltale signs, of course, would be having difficulty waking up in the morning, waking up groggy. I always used to say to myself, I feel like a Mack truck has hit me, And the other difficulty with people with adrenal burnout is that they just can't seem to get a good quality sleep, but they also don't seem to be able to fall asleep or stay asleep. So sleep patterns are usually very disturbed. About, I'd say 95% of the people who come to me have sleep disturbances. So it's one of the primary things, one of the initial things I like to try to solve right when I start working with people. But it's interesting, you and I have gone down the same path in terms of trying different diets in order to help overcome chronic fatigue or adrenal burnout. And I made the same mistakes you did. I went to a high carbohydrate diet, not really understanding nutrition or biochemistry. And all of those choices that I made, which were similar to yours, a lot of the grains and the low fat, meaning a diet low in animal fat, I was doing a lot of juicing and greens and you name it. And I really, just kept getting sicker and sicker and sicker, not really connecting the dots, because everything I was told I was doing was healthy. So it really distracted me from saying, you know what, maybe something else, there's something else I need to do here nutritionally. And I'll tell you the bottom line here, what I was missing was the importance of the animal fats. And the best fuel for the adrenal glands turns out to be animal fat. And that would be things like butter, meat, cod liver oil, all of these wonderful foods. So I was doing a diet that was diametrically opposed to that. So it was no wonder that my fatigue kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Wow. So that's like the opposite of what we're telling the average person in America to eat. We're telling them to eat, good quality whole grains and plenty of, low fat choices in their food, and really to limit animal meat and animal fat. So, mm-hmm. How come this is so different?
Well, it's because we've lost common sense in terms of our dietary habits. What has taken over would be what the food industry wants and what lobbyists want, and that's just for profit. It has nothing to do with our health. So before World War II, we didn't have fat phobia, butter phobia, egg phobia, red meat phobia, chicken skin phobia, liver phobia. I mean, we didn't have any of those food phobias before World War II. And guess what? We were much healthier, both physically and mentally, before World War II than we are today. And so after World War II is when these food phobias hit us, and even more so in the 1970s. The low-fat craze really came to light heavily in the 1970s, and it was in the 1980s where you start to see people collapsing with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia.
Oh, wow. So, I'm often saying now to my patients, given the nutritional information I'm now learning, is that, when I do some testing on them, I do some kinesiology testing on them, and find that so many are sensitive to grains, specifically gluten and sometimes corn and sometimes even rice. So then I say, I really want you to limit these things, and if you're gluten sensitive, I want you to get rid of it altogether. And then they kind of look at me blankly and go, oh, my God, what am I going to eat? What are some of the things that you do prescribe for your clients to eat instead of what not to eat, which is sometimes what I end up doing initially in my practice?
Yeah, I'd like to focus on what to eat, and that is, of course, to get about 70% of their calories from animal fat. We have to get over, in order to overcome chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and all of these other related illnesses, we have to overcome our fat phobia. So instead of having a bagel for breakfast or a box cereal for breakfast, I want people eating a traditional breakfast. That would be something along the lines of a bacon and egg style breakfast, so that there's plenty of animal fat in there in order to not just stabilize your nervous system, but to actually nourish your adrenal glands. So, we have to, and I know the demonization that goes on with bacon and with eggs, and I've heard all of the stories, but when you look at what the alternatives are things like bagels or toast or box cereal, and those are just not adequate in terms of, number one, being able to stabilize your blood sugar levels, and number two, actually nourishing your adrenal glands. So when people start hearing any kind of demonization over these traditional foods, I want people to take a step back and say, where does this demonization come from? And it's from a technique, a marketing technique that's been used in the food industry for many, many years, and it's called negative nutrition. And negative nutrition basically is the same strategy that politicians use to demonize each other in order to gain the vote. You know, so when they demonize one food, it's usually because they're trying to bring up in the marketplace another food. So they've done a really good job in demonizing butter. They've done a really good job in demonizing almost every animal food that's out there, for that matter. So so you need to take a step back and understand how that marketing ploy is being used to manipulate us, and realize that if you're, in particular, for example, if you're of European descent, then, you know, your ancestors did very well eating things like pork and red meat and butter and dairy products. And the dairy products, of course, would have been, you know, grass-fed and local and raw. So we've seen all of these foods, of course, go on the wayside because what is more competitive and what is more profitable would be things like, you know, chicken and soy. Chicken is easier to produce, more profitable. Soy is easier to produce, more profitable. So once we understand this marketing ploy, I think most of us will go back to common sense and eat the way our ancestors ate, and that will give us a better opportunity to be healthy, both physically and mentally.
Wow. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Now that I've learned more about how the food industry works, I was actually quite shocked and felt, oh my gosh, I'm so naive. I had no idea. But certainly there's some wonderful movies out that have really helped me kind of get introduced to what's going on really in the food industry. And unfortunately, it is all about the money. So those of us that don't want to be swayed that way can make more conscious food choices, which is why we have you on the show, so people can learn more. Now, I do think I have a hand raised. So let me unmute this person and see if he or she has a question. So you're unmuted. Your phone number ending in 2259. Do you have a question for Pam? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, do you have a question for Pam?
I don't at this time. No, thank you. I'm calling because I can't get your thing on my computer.
Oh, I know who you are, but I won't say your name unless you want me to. Okay, thank you for joining us. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll mute you again, and I guess maybe your hands up was an accident, but that's okay. Well, thanks for joining us.
Okay.
So, Pam, what is it about fat that is, or animal fat specifically, versus, say, you know, vegetable fat, that is healing for the adrenals?
Well, the animal fats contain what are known as the fat-soluble vitamins A and D, and it's very important to get the vitamin A from animal fat versus what is being called animal or vitamin A that you would find in, say, apples or carrots or tomatoes, for example. That is beta-carotene. It is not vitamin A, so it's a very big mistake to rely on getting your vitamin A from plant sources. You really should be getting it from animal fats. And, of course, where does the animal obtain that vitamin A? Well, the animal gets the vitamin A from being out eating grass and converting the carotenoids in the grass into this wonderful vitamin A, which is very important for detoxification. It's also very stabilizing, and it's very, very good for the adrenal glands. We need the vitamin A for the adrenals. We need the vitamin A for the thyroid as well. So, unfortunately, since we've become fat phobic, we're depleted in vitamin A, and these systems have just gotten weaker and weaker and weaker generation after generation following this low-fat diet. So I'm very, very concerned when I see young children today. And unfortunately, when I see young children who have trouble getting out of bed, I say to myself, oh, that was me. That was my red flag growing up as a child. And I finally collapsed in my early 20s with the chronic fatigue. But when I see young children today who are, you know, having difficulty getting out of bed in the morning and people normalizing that, that is a huge concern for me because it is not normal for children to be sluggish in the morning, have trouble getting out of bed. Children should be excited for the day in the morning when they get out of bed. They should be refreshed, you know, and this is just not what I see happening with our young people today. So, you know, parents need to look at that very carefully and say, what is going wrong here that my child is not excited about getting out of bed in the morning?
Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I'm seeing more and more the illnesses that I was seeing people in their 40s and 50s with now in, you know, teens and early 20s, which is really sad. But
I see a lot of my clients Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of my clients in their 20s, they can't get out of bed. They're exhausted. They have brain fog.
Yep.
Brain fog is another big one, and I'm sure you see a lot of that, Karen, is
this
fuzzy, fuzzy feeling in the brain. And that, of course, is just a sign that the body is just so full of toxins and you're not eliminating properly. And I know that's an oversimplification, but people need to understand it's not a psychological thing. It is something
right.
very physical. So, and this is what happened when I was sick, is you're running around trying to find solutions for the problem, and you think you're going crazy because you're saying, you know, when I was a kid, my brain worked. I got straight A's in school, and all of a sudden now my brain doesn't work. What is going on? And, you know, people feel like, you know, it's a psychological problem when indeed it's really just a very physical imbalance that's going on. So I think once people realize that, the albatross comes off their shoulders and they say, now what can I do to clear this foggy feeling in my brain? And that's what one of the main focuses of what I do in my practice is I get people to do a lot of heavy-duty detoxification systems because biochemically, I can see the imbalances, number one, and I can predict what the breakdown has, what breakdowns have occurred within the system that have, you know, essentially backed up the system, right? And things like coffee enemas can work wonderfully in order to start releasing some of these backed up toxins, in particular the heavy metals. And it's no joke when you hear stories about people doing the coffee enemas and then they're head clears up and they start having more energy. It won't happen with every single person who tries the coffee enemas, but it will happen eventually after practicing and doing it and trying it over and over again. But that's what happens is the bile, a secondary thing that has happened because of the low-fat diet, is that the bile gets thick and sluggish and it starts to form gallstones through the bile duct system.
Mm.
And so the bile not only gets thick and sluggish, but it gets trapped. It doesn't come down into the small intestine to be able to absorb the fat-soluble vitamins, which are crucial for your, like I said, your adrenals and your thyroid. But you're also not going to absorb your minerals as effectively because these fat-soluble vitamins are activators and they're very necessary for you to absorb your minerals. So essentially, over time, you become demineralized as well. So what you have to do, one of the most important things that I encourage people to do is to essentially resuscitate the liver and the gallbladder area. And I don't know anything better to do that than the coffee enemas. They're just magical.
Wow. Yeah, I have heard of that. I haven't tried it myself yet, but I have heard of that. And one of the questions that one of my patients had was like when her gallbladder was acting up, you know, the doctors, and we always tell them to go on a low-fat diet, and symptomatically they improve. So this almost seems counter to what you're saying about, you know, the fat and the bile. So could you explain that a little bit?
Sure.
About how,
well, yeah. some people, you know, there's confounding variables when people switch it to a diet. And you can't just say it's because she went low fat. She probably made other changes to the diet as well. She probably removed vegetable oils, processed foods, and so on and so forth. So you have to be very careful when hearing that type of anecdotal story. And the reason why I say that is because the only way to really know whether a diet is healthy is by asking these five fundamental questions. You have to say to yourself, does this dietary information prove to me that couples are fertile? And I mean generation after generation after generation, right? And then you must ask yourself, does this prove to me that babies are healthy generation after generation after generation? And does this prove to me that there is no chronic disease or mental disorders in society? Does this dietary information prove to me that that the aging are aging gracefully and that they're still productive members of society? So you need to cover all those bases before buying into any nutritional advice. And I know why it's so confusing today to hear all of this advice, you know, low-fat, vegetarian, juicing, metabolic typing, all of these different fads that are out there today. And it's very seductive, very easy to buy into these systems, but none of these systems that I just mentioned have any real historic precedence. There's no way you can answer any of those questions when you look at these particular types of diets or different forms of healing, for example. So you have to look generationally, and that's one of the things that's missing today. We hear, for example, you know, President Clinton saying, "Oh, I switched to a vegan diet. No, it's just so healthy." Well, he can't say it's healthy because he, first of all, his genetics are not adapted to a vegan diet. There's no history within his family or even around the world, for that matter, showing that a vegan diet is healthy. People are just guessing. You know, and I'm a recovering vegan, and I can tell you the vast majority of my clients are recovering vegetarians or vegans, and I just don't see any health benefits coming out of those two diets whatsoever.
Wow. And so some of the supplements for adrenal fatigue will have high doses of vitamin A, and what you're saying is that this is synthetic vitamin A. This is not the right kind of vitamin A necessarily for the adrenals.
Right. I think a good cod liver, I mean, I think it's every single one of my clients goes on a cod liver oil. And I do realize that there are different qualities to cod liver oils on the market. So I just ask people to do the best they can, you know, based on their budgets, right? Because I know some of the cod liver oils are going to be a little bit more expensive than others. And if you just get a good one on the marketplace, certainly I think that's better than nothing. But I wouldn't recommend one that's inferior to good. Like you have your really bad ones, and then you have good ones, and then you have ones that are excellent on a grading scale. And you have to do a little bit of research before you can choose one that's within your budget. But worst case scenario, if people do not have it in their budget to get cod liver oil, certainly I would recommend a lot of butter.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, you know, I hated liver as a child, eating that, although we did eat quite a few other organ meats as a child. Like, I think we ate pork kidney and cow's tongue, although that's not really an organ, but it's unusual. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't stand liver. My mom said, you can only have one food that you say no to, and that was liver for me. And the other day I bought a half chicken from this local lady who raises it organically. So it was like $5.50 a pound or something like that for the chicken. Well, after I baked it, I noticed there was a little piece of liver next to it, and I thought, oh, boy, I know this is probably good for me. So I thought, you know what, after all these years, I'm going to try it. So I ate it, and of course I'm not a big fan of the texture, but you know what, it didn't taste that bad. And I think part of it was, well, when I think back of where my parents were getting the chicken, it was from the grocery store, frozen.
Oh, yeah.
And who knows where that was from. And
yeah,
I didn't like that back then.
Yeah, if you want to eat liver, of course, the gold standard would be to get it from a local farmer where the animals are out on pasture. The thing about liver, too, is that when you overcook it, that tends to, you know, make it rubbery and not so enjoyable. So you really just don't want to overcook liver when you're frying it up. Hopefully frying it in lard or tallow or butter.
Some people listening to this going, oh, my God, I can't believe you're saying that. But I know when I was in the midst of, you know, the adrenal fatigue, I would just have these fat cravings. And it was very common for me to open up a can of, you know, smoked oysters with, you know, that was full of oil and just down that at midnight because I was so hungry and I just felt like I needed to be filled somehow. And I think my body craved that.
Yeah, you think about the word saturated fat, then that is mostly from, when we think about it, it's foods like butter and red meat and eggs and so on. So you think saturated fat, you think automatically animal fat. There are other saturated fats out there, but let's just talk about animal fat here. So saturated, you think about the word, satisfy, sated, satiety. So when people are on a low-fat diet, it's hard for them to feel satisfied, so they end up overeating, and that's why you see so many people following these low-fat diets, and they all end up becoming, you know, obese or overweight or what have you. So they're just not stabilizing their systems. They're just starving themselves, so they just have to keep eating ostensibly. So yeah, when you start eating enough animal fat in your diet, you really, it's hard to overeat.
Right, exactly, because you get so full. Now, what do you say or counsel your clients as far as, you know, the grains? Because I mean, obviously, most of us are raised on grains as so-called healthy, but some people just really like grains. So, like for example, say gluten-free oatmeal or something like that. So how do you counsel your clients on grains?
Well, grain isn't all that bad. I think it needs to be soaked or fermented somehow. You know, I think it needs some pre-digestion process before consuming it. And that would be for most grains out there. So, for example, I'm Irish and Scottish descent, so my ancestors would have eaten probably quite a few oats, but the oats would have been soaked overnight before consuming, right? So there's some pre-digestion process. In other cultures, of course, things like sourdough bread are very popular. And when I say sourdough, I'm talking about an authentic sourdough, not a very highly commercialized sourdough bread. So grain does need some, essentially, you know, pre-digestion going on in order so that it doesn't tax your digestive system. So I know that there's a lot of, you know, gluten-free this and a lot of, you know, information going on about wheat right now. And I do agree with most of that information. But if you do insist on eating grains, make sure that they're traditionally prepared. So I always say a nice traditional piece of sourdough bread is a really good excuse to pound on the butter, you know, and get more animal fat. So, and I don't like to take away a traditional sourdough bread from a family simply because it's a handy way to make a really delicious and nutritious sandwich for a child to go to school with. And, you know, if I talk about a meal in the day for a child to take to school, that would be it, a nice piece of or two of sourdough bread, and then you put, you know, some leftover beef or chicken or turkey from a roast that you would have made on Sunday night, and there you have a pretty decent lunch to send a child to school with. If I take sourdough bread out of the picture, then unfortunately a lot of mothers are going to be scratching their heads, you know, and fathers are going to be scratching their heads and saying, what do I send my kid to school with now? So I don't totally ride this anti-grain bandwagon. I just want the grains to be properly prepared and hopefully, you know, not too heavily hybridized, so maybe more on this certified organic side.
Okay. Wow, that's great advice. We have about 3.5 minutes left. Could you share with us, you know, what your program is like and how people can learn more from you?
Mm-hmm. My program is extremely comprehensive. It's a lot of work, but to get the adrenals back, people need to do one of two things. They need to surrender to a whole different way of looking at health. In terms of the biochemistry, and that's what I educate people on, is the biochemical imbalances that are going on behind the adrenal fatigue. And it's a lot of work because my program is not just about taking supplements. It's also about doing the coffee enemas, and then I have a very specialized sauna system that I want people to use, because what the supplements I use are doing, and they're very targeted supplements. They're specific to everybody's biochemistry. And what the supplements are doing is they're essentially unleashing trapped heavy metals. And when the heavy metals start to unleash in the body, we have these backup systems that are in place. In other words, the coffee enemas and the near-infrared sauna, in order to keep pulling out the heavy metals. So it's essentially a five-part program. Has to be all done very systematically in order to restore the biochemistry, and one needs to be extremely patient because it can take a year or two before the adrenals fully come back and people start telling me that they're running on all 8 cylinders. It's not enough for me, you know, for people to be running on 4 cylinders. I want them running on all 8 cylinders.
Wow. So obviously diet and nutrition are a big part of that program, in addition to, you know, the lab testing, it sounds like, that you do, and the coffee enemas and the saunas and the supplements.
And it's not very expensive. That's why I love my program. I work with people who are on disability because, as you know, a lot of people with chronic fatigue and adrenal burnout can't work. So my program is extremely affordable, but they must do the work. I actually turn people away if I don't think they're going to do the work. I screen everybody very carefully and make sure that they're going to be compliant, because I can't have people only give me 5 or 10%. They need to do the whole program, because when they do the whole program, I see nothing but good. People get better. They recover.
Oh, that's fabulous. Well, where can people contact you or learn more about this program?
My website is just my name, www.pamkilleen.com, and my email is pam@pamkilleen.com, and Killeen is spelled K-I-L-L-E-E-N.
Oh, great. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And so in the last few seconds, 40 seconds, do you have any last-minute, like, advice to take away points for people?
I just think with the adrenal fatigue, I want people to know that there is hope. I didn't think when I had chronic fatigue that there was any hope. And I just know that the situation can be turned around, that it's not a permanent label for a lifetime. So just know that that you can recover, and that the sleep will improve, the energy will improve, the brain fog can go away, everything is possible. You can get back to running on all eight cylinders again. It's just, it takes a lot of work. And please, you know, for most people out there, stop looking for silver bullets, because I think that that gives us a lot, too much false hope, and I just don't think it's fair to sell people false hope.
Oh, thank you so much, Pam, for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Karen, and I think I'm back on next Monday as well.
Yes, yes, we're back on next Monday, and we're going to be talking about addictions, the hidden epidemic, so please join us, everyone, then. Take care, and until next time. Bye now.
Thanks, Karen. Bye-bye.
Bye.